Just like that, we start hour number two. And I mean just like that. That was a short break coming off the end of that first hour. A forgettable end of the first hour. Start hour number two with this quick tweet from Rex in the ABQ. Nice job, Mark. I made that call 2 weeks ago. He did. Rex, you make that call every time you call. But you're right. You did make that call already. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so setting up the rest of the program. Coming up next segment, Dana White. Fight Island. It's a big one. One of the biggest fights, I think, ever in his promotion. Gaethje and Habib. Habib has never lost. Pound for pound, the best in the business. Arguably the best to ever do it. I'm going to argue that if he wins this fight, and then he goes on and he wins a 30th fight, and he walks off undefeated, he's one of the greatest athletes, one of the most dominant athletes ever in any sport. Because if Habib were to do that, and that's a big if Habib were to do that, Habib would go undefeated in a sport where literally everybody loses. I would argue if that guy goes 30-0, and not only 30-0, but 30-0 with the loss of one single round in his entire career, I would consider him one of the most dominant athletes in any sport, period, if he gets there. Dana White joins me at 20 past. At 40 past, 49ers cornerback Jason Verrett. Big head bets, top of hour number three. Obvious week that was in the third hour. The ATP coming up in hour number three. All of these things still ahead, and your phone number if you're good enough, and so far you have not been. I want to remind you that we knocked out an episode of the Jim Rohn podcast. In fact, we're ahead. I've already got a great book for next week. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm fired up for it. Rit has turned around a good, good guest for next week. And I've got a really good guest for this week. It's already in the can. Don't listen right now. Wait until after the program, on your commute home, the weekend, when you're at the gym, when you're on your hike, wherever you are. It's a really good episode. 148. It's live. It's up. It's ready. It's in all the usual spots. This week, I've got a great conversation with a former 12-year NFL vet, a Super Bowl champion defensive back, Will Blackman. Now, you might know Will from his decade plus in the NFL, but he has been hustling hard and making big-time moves in the wine industry ever since he retired 4 years ago. He's done other things. He's done some coaching. He's done some broadcasting. But he's hitting the grape hard. And now when you talk about where people live, that's not where I live. But I'm fascinated by his passion for it and the way he's attacking it. And we cover it all. From the football field to the cellar. And even a time where the two worlds collided in a hilarious but productive way. Rapping with Will was great because he took no time to get settled in. Dude just started spinning stories and anecdotes, and they were good. Like that time at the Combine when he had a pre-draft interview with Marv Lewis and the Bengals and also Gunther Cunningham and the Chiefs. Check out how the Combine went for him.
It's funny. You hear all these like crazy Combine stories. I met with the Bengals, and I just remember it was probably like 9 p.m., and I'm talking to Marv Lewis and all the coaches, and they're really like grilling me with stuff. And I look up. Marv Lewis is laid out sleeping, unconscious, dude. I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to Cincinnati. But with the Chiefs, I go in there, and I sit down in the chair. It's just me, Herm, and Gunther. And they start role-playing, like, okay, what if we're in a nightclub? And some guy just comes up, and he's in your face, and I can see Gunther, like, walking towards me slowly. You know, he had, like, that walk like he was in the hood somewhere. It was so funny, you know, him trying to imitate the walk. Right? So he walks up on me, and he just does this to you, and he puts his hands on my neck.
Dude.
Starts to, like, semi-choke me. And honestly, Jim, I busted out laughing so hard. I was like, guys, I cannot take you guys serious right now. They said, what do you mean? What would you do? I was like, I don't know. I guess I would defend myself or call authorities. You know, I try to play the good guy card again.
Old school Gunther Cunningham in a meeting at the Combine started to choke Will Blackman. And he laughed in his face. And they're like, no, what would you do? What would you do? I don't know. Call the authorities? Call the bouncer over? So Marv Lewis straight conked out hard in the middle of the meeting, and Cunningham tried to wrap up on his neck. Except it was such a poor demonstration of a potential real situation that Will admitted I just laughed in the guy's face. All is well that ends well, I suppose, because Blackmon ends up with the Packers. He gets drafted by Green Bay, as you Packer fans recall, and he ends up in the same secondary with Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson was his guy. Charles Woodson was a guy he looked up to. Charles Woodson was a guy that he crushed wine with. Now, you want to talk about a good story. The whole purpose behind podcasts, talk to anybody who hosts a podcast, and they will tell you, we're here to let people tell stories. Will has got good stories. Listen to this one.
Charles, he would always take the defensive back out to dinner on road games. So we go to Minnesota. We had a lot of time to go hang out, and there's a restaurant in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis. You know, we end up ordering wines like usual. And so we're there for a while. We end up having more wine. And then I remember there was like an upstairs and we heard music and we're like, hey, like what's upstairs? And like, oh, it sounds like a club or a lounge. So we get up there. They just give us a cool little section area. We can all sit down. It's four of us, like me, Charles, Nick Collins, Tremont Williams. And so we go up there, we hang out, and then we have time. So, hey, let's get a few more drinks. We ran into Joe Buck and Troy Aikman because they were calling the game. And then we get back in time for meetings. I just remember, I was like, gosh, you know, I'm a little hazy right now. And I'm getting nervous. And then got the next morning, I'm like, dude, I feel like absolute garbage. You know, I need to hydrate. I need to get an IV. The game gets going. Immediately, Charles Woodson gets an interception. And then later, Tremont Williams gets an interception. And then later, Nick Collins gets a pick six. And then now I go back there to return a kick. Already with all this in mind, like, damn, Charles, Nick, and Tremont are balling out. And then Chris Cooley, he outkicked everybody, and it was a perfect punt. Boom. I'm getting this line drive kick. I make a couple moves, and I'm scot-free, and I scored. I just remember running to the sideline, and we all got together. We're like, bro, that is unbelievable what just happened. Like, we need to get lit every damn weekend, you know?
That is an amazing story, an amazing NFL story. So they're going up against the Vikings, and keep in mind, the Packers and Vikings hate each other's guts. That is a significant rivalry. And these guys are drinking wine. The part that he leaves out in that story, I think they were doing more than drinking wine. I think when they went upstairs and they hit that lounge, they slammed a few shots too. He admitted when he got back to the facility and they had the nighttime meetings, and this is the day before an early afternoon game, he said, man, I'm hazy. I'm not feeling good about things for the meetings. And he woke up, said he felt like crap and did everything he could. Yet he's got his other guys, the vets in the secondary, and they're making plays. They're balling out. And then he took one to the house. It's incredible. An entire secondary hung to hell on the grape, balling out for a combined total of three INTs and a couple of touchdowns in the same game. Everybody got a piece. And I love the casual mention of Troy Aikman and Joe Buck were in the lounge when these guys were getting sauced the night before. Because you got to believe, not that Aikman and Buck, I mean, Aikman played the game, and Buck, these guys have seen everything. But they had to have been doing that game going, man, we saw all of these dudes last night get ripped, and look at them just all making plays and taking it to the house. Now, Will didn't just turn wine into a great game against the Vikings. He has turned wine into a passion, an obsession, a career. Right now, he owns and operates a company called the Wine MVP, where he'll do everything from getting you started down that path to curating your entire cellar. He's a history buff, so he loves coaching former teammates up on what they are drinking.
I had a teammate call me, and he's like, hey, man, I love Moscato, but people look at it like, oh, it's a feminine drink. You know, it's not masculine because it's a sweet wine. I go, okay, if you need some ammo, I got you. He was like, tell me. I said, so Moscato, the interesting thing about that is that when the World War II veterans came home, there was a high demand for Moscato because that's the beverage of choice when they were fighting over there. They loved Moscato. I said, so there were guys dying for our country drinking that. So you tell them that. And that's the stuff I love. I was never like big on the lifestyle being super cool because my whole brand is, let's chill out. It's just fermented grape juice. It's super fun, but you're not better than anybody else because you drink wine, you know?
I know. I get that. So don't get it twisted. This is a straight up passion project and a hustle, a good hustle for Blackmon. Wine enthusiasts put him on their 40 under 40 tastemakers 2020 list. SI did an entire feature piece on him recently. So he is crushing it. And you can tell the way he talks about it, the passion he has for it. He calls it not just an immersion, but an obsession. So I had to ask him, listen, man, what are you more proud of? Your football career or your second career?
pride for sure in football because not everyone could do that and not everyone could play 12 years. Not everyone can have 9 surgeries and keep bouncing back. Not everyone can get cut the year Green Bay wins the Super Bowl and then come back the next year with the New York Giants and get a Super Bowl. Like, a lot of people quit after one injury. So the fact that I set out to be one of the 1% of the 1% and get it, I'm way more proud of that. No question about it.
I like that. You know, I thought that maybe he might argue or answer that in a different way. He said, oh, no. Football. Football is a thing. I set out to be the upper 1% of the upper 1%, and I did that, so that's definitely the answer. But you can tell he's all in on this. Hard to argue with any of it. Fact of the matter is, he's already had a great run in a couple of arenas, and he's still a 30-something dude with a lot of great things ahead of him. But he knows which one means more to him or which one he has more pride in. Make sure you check out the entire podcast. Will Blackman does not live that far from me, and he does do some coaching in the area. He's got a tremendous take on the crazy SoCal sports parents. So we cover a ton of ground, more than just football and wine. This one is really good and really worth finding. Speaking of finding, you can find episode 148 on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, jimrome.com, or go to the link that's pinned to the top of my Twitter feed right now. It's Will Blackman, episode 148. Episode 149 is already booked, and we'll push that out next Wednesday. Phone lines are ringing there, old man. Jump on that stuff. They want in. 1-800-636-8686. Kind of pulling your leg, Rit. I know we're short-staffed. We are down a man. When we come back, actually, let me give you a few thoughts on some other things I want to talk about. Danny turnovers. So I mentioned that whole game last night and what a bad football game that was and how much dumb football there was. And that was the epitome of NFC East football. That as bad as that was, it was still a massive matchup between a couple of one-win teams. The Giants have that 11-point lead, 5 minutes to go. They find a way to choke. That's what they do. What I still haven't gotten to is his run, the actual run. We touched on it, but I haven't laid it out. Like, the run was so bad, he gets his own take on the run itself. In addition to that, the Raiders. One of the games that I was really looking forward to this weekend, I still am, kind of, Raiders-Bucks. Except I'm not sure where that game stands because the Raiders are not paying attention to COVID protocols. If any team should be, it's the Raiders. Yet they continue to misstep and they might be without their entire offensive line. We'll get into what that means. Also, the Big Head makes his triumphant return. It's Friday. Big Head bets. We'll get his picks on Friday. For a Friday. And when we come back, we're talking to Dana White, the president of the UFC. Tremendous fight card on Fight Island, and he will break it down for us. In the meantime, you want to get in on all the football action with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions in total prizes, which are up for grabs. You draft your lineup, and you feel the sweat like never before. Every run, every pass, every catch means even more with DraftKings. It's very simple. Pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions of bucks in prizes. And for everybody who's looking forward to this weekend's UFC 254 matchup, and Dana White is coming up in a moment, you want to make sure to check out DraftKings MMA contests. Download the DraftKings app, use the code ROME, and for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes this week. Codename Rome. Get a free shot at millions for your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Only at DraftKings. See DraftKings.com for details.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, hyped to do this enormous weekend for UFC. We are joined right now by the president of the UFC, friend of the program, UFC 254. Tremendous fight card headlined by Habib Gaethje tomorrow night. Note the start time, 2 p.m. Eastern. 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. My guest is Dana White. Dana, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good, good. Dana, everybody's been waiting for this fight for a long, long time. The countdown is underway. We're about 25 hours out from the main card. How fired up are you for this particular card?
I'm so pumped for this thing, man. Obviously, we've had an incredible run here on Fight Island, and, you know, we saved the best for last. This thing is indexing off the charts for us, man. It's looking like it's going to be, if you go by the numbers and the stats that we have right now, this thing is definitely doing over a million buys, and it's saying that we should be the biggest pay-per-view ever.
I was just going to say, Dana, in terms of indexing, but I think you answered the question already. So you're looking at over 1 million pay-per-view buys, and this could go down as the biggest one ever. Is that how it feels to you?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are saying that. The problem is that Khabib is so big in Russia and the Muslim countries, and, you know, every time this guy fights, you know, everything goes off the charts. He's broke records on social media. He's the number one downloaded fighter, the number one played fighter on the video game, on our website. He's the number one viewed fighter page. So, you know, he blows all the numbers out of the water. But by pre-buys globally and everything that we're doing with ESPN, this thing is a massive, massive fight for us.
We are talking to Dana White. Enormous fight. Now, Dana, the weigh-in was earlier today, Eastern time. Both fighters did make weight. Khabib looked a little relieved that he made weight. What was the mood like for the weigh-in?
Yeah, no, he's always, you know, the same. You know, he's always got the same personality, the same tone of voice. You know, and I agree. He looked like he was excited to make weight. But I don't know if he had a rough cut or not. I'm hearing from his camp that he did not. But if they did have a rough cut, they wouldn't tell me anyway.
Dana White joining us. I'm sure not. Now, you've been around both fighters at the weigh-in, and they squared off earlier this week before posing for pictures. What is your sense as to the respect that each guy has for the other guy?
Yeah, no, that's been really fun to watch, actually. You know, we go into these fight weeks where guys are screaming and yelling and going at each other and stuff. The level of respect that's been shown between these two guys has been really, really cool. And I think, listen, you know, when they get in there, it's going to be a crazy fight. But the level of respect, I think the fans love that too.
We're talking to Dana White. Now, Dana, Khabib has made the point that everything that's happened in the past 4 months, like, he doesn't need this fight. He's already famous. He's already one of the greatest to ever do it. He's already got all the money he could ever need. He wants to fight, though, because he wants to fight great fights. What does that tell you about Khabib as a person and a competitor?
I love that about him. Undefeated, wants to continue to prove that he's the best, and wants to go down. You know, he's not saying, I want to be known as the most dominant champion of all time, and this is a big night for him tomorrow night, because I truly believe a win makes him the pound for pound best fighter in the world, and he's on his way to GOAT status.
I was going to say, Dana, what about that? What about legacy? For instance, and this is a big if, he's got to get this done, but if he wins tomorrow, that moves him to 29-0. It would give him 12 UFC wins, which puts him in a tie for second most of all time. If he wins that fight, I mean, it might make him the best pound for pound in the sport, but what about his legacy? What about his place in history? Where would a win put him then?
He's definitely the pound for pound if he wins tomorrow, and he's definitely, you know, the greatest 155-pounder ever. And he's on his way to being the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. I mean, the guy is 28-0. He's undefeated. It's just nobody has a record like that. And nobody has been as dominant as he has. You know, he's on his way. And I think he's a couple fights away from people calling him the GOAT.
Khabib and Gaethje coming up. Dana, what about his mindset? Like, you know how very, very close he was to his father, who was more than just that, his father, his mentor, his coach, his best friend. What's your sense as to how he's dealing with that loss?
Yeah, that's tough to call. You know, he's a guy's guy, so he holds everything very close, you know, and doesn't talk about these things. You know, he doesn't get overly emotional one way or the other. So I'm sure he's devastated by it. They were super close. He loved his father very much and respected his father. And there's no doubt that this is a huge factor in the fight tomorrow night.
Dan, I'm not sure that pound for pound there's a more exciting fighter or more explosive guy right now than Gaethje. And his last time out was absolutely amazing. So what would a win over Khabib mean for Justin Gaethje's legacy and his place in history?
It's massive. It's massive for Gaethje. If Gaethje beats Khabib tomorrow night, you know, he stepped up during this pandemic, took a fight when somebody else didn't want it, and got himself into this position and to come in to Abu Dhabi and beat Habib here, it's huge. It's massive. It's very, very big for not only his career, but financially and every other way.
Well, and Dan, plus his transformation, right? I mean, take me back a little bit. When Gaethje lost back-to-back fights to Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier, if I had told you back then that just over 2 years later he would be fighting Habib with a chance to win for the lightweight title, if I had told you that back then, what would you have said? Did you see this coming at all?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't shock me. We always thought that Gaethje, you know, when Gaethje came into the UFC, he was undefeated too. You got to get here. It's such a different level when you get to the UFC. You got to get here. You got to feel like this is your house. You got to, it takes some time. And no, it wouldn't have shocked me if you told me 2 years later he'd be fighting for the title.
Okay, fair enough. No shock in that. But how different is he as a fighter now as compared to where he was in 2017 and early 2018?
Yeah, no. Listen, you got to give him a ton of respect and credit for that. He definitely went back to the lab and worked on things that he needed to work on. And he looked incredible in the Tony fight. I saw a guy today writing, anybody who judges Gaethje off past fights is out of their mind. The only fight you can judge him on now when you're breaking down him and Habib is the Tony Ferguson fight.
Dana, watching that fight, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, with respect to Gaethje, who I think is amazing, that it was such an amazing performance. It was almost stunning to see how good he looked in that fight. Now, nobody's ever beaten Habib. Is there a blueprint, Dana, for how to do this? Or is Justin Gaethje going to have to figure out something completely new?
Yeah, there's no blueprint because nobody's ever done it. And I'm going to tell you this, when Dustin Poirier fought Habib, when the fight was over, he was horrified, and he was basically like, I've never faced anybody like this before, ever.
Yeah, and that's come from Poirier. What about Habib now? Has he ever faced anybody quite like Gaethje?
That's the thing. The reason this is a big fight, too, is a lot of people believe that Gaethje has the style to beat him. Obviously, he has dynamite in both hands. When he hits people, they go. And he has what you would call MMA style wrestling. It's suited to the sport. Not just like, oh, this guy was a D1 wrestler or whatever. He's actually got the type of wrestling that works in a fight.
No, I think that's key. I think some people tend to overlook that. All right, so the co-main event, Dana, before you go, is Robert Whittaker and Jared Cannonier. Cannonier is number one versus number two in the middleweight division, that matchup itself. How big of a fight is that?
Jim, it doesn't get any better. You got Robert Whittaker number one versus Cannonier number two to find out who goes after the wild man Adesanya next. You know what I mean? Adesanya's on a tear. Another guy undefeated. And number one versus number two to find out who takes on the champ. And both of these guys love to stand up and bang. It's going to be interesting. Cannonier has been working a lot on his takedown defense. He's gotten really good. But Robert Whittaker actually could have wrestled in the Olympics for Australia. So does this stay on its feet? Does it go to the ground? Can Whittaker take him to the ground if Cannonier starts lighting him up? It's a fun fight.
It's another great fight. Really quickly, Dana, Conor McGregor tweeted that he accepted the Poirier fight on January 23rd, and he wants to see the fight at Cowboy Stadium. Can you tell me, where do things stand with that fight in terms of the paperwork? Has that been signed yet? Where does that fight stand?
No, the paperwork has not been signed. No contracts are signed for the Conor Poirier fight. I don't see it happen at Dallas, Texas Stadium. We've been talking to those guys for a while. I mean, it's all going to – I'm looking at this Saturday. I don't know what's going to happen after Saturday. We got this, we'll see how this year ends in the nuttiest year of all time. And who knows if we'll even have fans back in the United States by then. So it's something I'm not even thinking about. If we get the fight done, now is the time that I have to start looking at where we do it. And so we would have that locked up way early before, any of these stadiums are going to open to everybody.
When do you think, Dan, if you had to guess, is there any way even to project or guess when you might have fans back in the arena?
Listen, Abu Dhabi, Fight Island, is the new fight capital of the world right now. And if anything, I would believe that they've got stuff so dialed in over here that they'll be the first to have fans back.
right, Dana, one last thought. I know you're thinking about Saturday, but I have to ask you about our guy, Khamzat Chimaev. When is he fighting again? Because, Dana, he's looking to fight everybody on Twitter right now. When does he get an actual fight again?
So we just got a deal done yesterday for Leon Edwards versus Chimaev. They will fight. It will be a great fight. And he can stop calling everybody out on Twitter now. He's got an opponent.
For those, okay, that's good to know. When and where is that going to happen?
I don't know yet. I'll figure that out when I get home.
And then finally, for those who have not seen Chimaev, what are they missing? What is his upside? How has he separated himself already?
Well, let me tell you what. This guy fought on Fight Island, went in there and absolutely destroyed a really good prospect. And then he got on the mic and said, I want to fight again next week. And then after he did that, he came out and came up and he said, I'm dead serious. I want to fight again next week. And I said, done. I'll do it. We get him another fight. He destroys another really good prospect easily. So then he says he wants to fight again next week. And I said, wait a minute. Let's wait till you get home. So we end up getting him a fight against a very, very tough vet. He goes in and crushes him with one punch. And he's a weight class higher than Chimaev is. Crushes him with one punch knockout. And, you know, this guy had 30,000 followers in his first fight. He has almost 1 million followers now. This kid's one fight away from being a massive superstar. If he can beat Leon Edwards, he's going to be a massive superstar in the UFC.
He's almost like, and I don't want to compare anybody to Khabib because there's only Khabib. He's one of one. He's almost like an angry Khabib, right?
Yeah, he's an angry Khabib. That's funny. Yeah, that's a good. He's not, though. He's actually a nice guy. He just, I would say he's a super confident Khabib, man. This guy wants to fight everybody, anybody. He doesn't care. He'll move up one weight class, two weight classes. And when you're a fight fan, those type of guys are fun. You love guys that want to fight like that. You love guys that want to take on the absolute best in the world in different weight classes. Or you're the guy that wants to see a guy like that lose. So it's good in every way, shape, and form.
And when you're UFC president, you love a guy like that anytime, anywhere. I bet that guy would fight every single day if you let him. He is UFC president. UFC 254 is going to be enormous. Dana White says it might be the biggest pay-per-view of all time. You've got Khabib, Gaethje tomorrow. There's more to it than just that card. Dana, really quickly, it's got a really unusual start time. What time does this go off?
Yeah, so it starts at 2 o'clock on the East Coast. 2 o'clock on the East Coast. We've been doing the same time for 20 years, so it's hard to get people to remember when you change the date. But 2 o'clock on the East Coast.
2 p.m. Eastern on
ESPN2 and ESPN+.
Got it. 2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, ESPN+. Dana White, UFC president. Dana, really appreciate you coming on the day before the fight. Have an amazing weekend. I know it's going to be great, and it's always good to have you on, Dana. Thanks so much.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, too. Dana White, he's hyped. And it's genuine, too. Like, Dana's got to do business. Dana's got to push things. But to Dana's point, hey, listen, this one's selling itself. This could go down as the biggest pay-per-view ever. Over 1 million buys. Khabib, Gaethje, UFC 254. The big head, James Kelly, and I will talk about that at the top of the hour. Khabib has never lost. Is Gaethje the guy who can get him? We'll talk about it. Good to have Dana White back. All right, telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Use it. Now, I do have an interview coming up next segment. 49ers corner, Jason Verrett. That's next. Then big head picks. We talk NFL, we'll talk some World Series, and we will talk about the fight. James Kelly joins me at the top of hour number 3. Alvin's Week That Was coming up next hour. And more. First up, though, here is a bottom of the hour sports update for y'all.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. I am live in our Southern California-based studios. My thanks to Dana White, who is on Fight Island. Amazing fight card. Khabib, Gaethje, headlining that tomorrow. All right, telephone call is coming up, but as promised, we are talking 49ers football. We are joined right now by a cornerback for the 49ers, a Pro Bowler. He had 3 tackles, a couple of passes defended. He had a big interception in Sunday's win over the Rams. He was PFF's Defensive Player of the Week. He was an All-American and a co-Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year at TCU. He was the 25th pick overall in 2014. San Francisco, 3-3 on the year. They've got a big one at New England on Sunday. That is a CBS game at 4:25 p.m. Eastern. Jason Verrett is my guest. Jason, it's been a while, but it's really good to have you on the show. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a while, man. Appreciate you having me.
It's great to have you back. I think your story is amazing. I know you're focused on New England, but if you could, can you take me back first to Sunday's game against the Rams, and in particular that interception in the end zone? I know there was a lot of film study that went into that, so what did you see as that play unfolded?
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of film study. We kind of knew that when they get in those bunch formations, what routes that they like to run out of it. On that play in particular, man, I just had leverage on my guys, still had vision back on the quarterback, man. And once I just saw the ball thrown, man, I made a play.
Jason Verrett joining us. Now, the team had lost two straight going into that game. It's a division game. It's in prime time. And you had a huge performance. What did it mean to you to be able to step up and have a game like that when it really mattered on a big stage?
Oh, man, you know, you live for those moments. You know, you live for those prime time moments and wanting to make plays out there. I think all throughout the week we had a good game plan. You know, I feel like coaches did a good job of preparing us. And as a whole, man, I just feel collectively we went out there and executed.
Jason, I mentioned at the very top that I'm amazed by your story. I think people who know your story know what you've done to get back to playing at this level. As an example, it really struck me how fired up, how hyped your teammates were for you after that game was over and over the course of the season, because they know the kind of work you've put in. What does it mean to you to have them supporting you the way they do?
Man, it means a lot, man. Not only the support from here. I mean, I had support from, you know, previous coaches and players, teammates that I was with the Chargers, man. So just getting all that feedback, man, just for guys to know how hard I work, you know, it was definitely overwhelming. But, you know, it motivated me even more to keep grinding. And, you know, I'm just happy to be back out there on the field making plays.
Jason Verrett joining us. You know, for those who do not know, you did go to the Pro Bowl early in your career with the Chargers. Then you suffered a torn ACL, followed by another knee injury, and then a torn Achilles in 2018. I mean, the ACL and the Achilles are the injuries that scare players the most, and you had both of them. Where were you mentally and psychologically after the Achilles injury?
Man, after the Achilles, man, to be real, man, I was torn, you know, just because I had no symptoms of anything going on with my ankles or heels or anything. So it was kind of like a freak injury. But yeah, when that happened, man, it was surreal for me. I mean, I was in a dark, dark, dark place, man, for quite some time. I just, you know, I think with the birth of my son during that time period, kind of helped me, to get back into that tunnel vision and grind and not really trying to feel sorry for myself, but kind of have somebody that I could grind for. So throughout that period, man, it was rough, but I found a way to shake it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I think that you had your why and you had your mission, and that had to have been a big part of it. I would imagine that there's a lot of people listening right now who are dealing with some really dark times, some really dark moments. I mean, it seems to me when you go through what you went through, it might have been tempting even to walk away from the game. So in addition to having your son, how were you able to get through those dark moments and those challenging times and push through?
Oh, man, during that time, I watched a lot of motivational interviews, Nipsey Hussle. I definitely watched a lot of his interviews, man, and just knowing about the energy that you put out, you know, the energy you put out will return to you. So during those dark moments that I was dealing with, I was just trying to stay positive, trying to keep the energy out there to keep me going forward. Along with Ikey Johnson, definitely a couple other people that I watched, but I just tried to focus on that, have a positive mentality, focus on the right energy that I put out, and, you know, just staying positive as much as possible.
Inky's the best, isn't he? Man, I love him. He is so good. He is so good. His energy is so good. Jason Verrett joining us. So then you're doing the work, right? You're putting the positive energy out there. You're rehabbing, and then it starts to come back. Your speed starts to come back, and you start doing one-on-one drills with Keenan Allen in the offseason. What did it feel like to start to feel like your old self again?
Oh, yeah, definitely. During this offseason, this past offseason, me and Keenan, Derwin James, we all grinded, and I think that the time that I spent with Keenan doing a bunch of one-on-one 707 with him, I felt like I got my juice back. You know, obviously he's one of the best receivers in the game. arguably one of the best off the line of scrimmage. So getting that work back with him, like how we used to grind in our days in San Diego, I just started to feel that momentum coming back, you know, and everything, the explosiveness in my hips and in my feet. And I was definitely excited to get to, you know, the Niners training camp, man, and I'm happy where I am now.
Jason Verrett joining us. And then you get to camp, and Richard Sherman was raving. He was raving about your speed. He was raving about your physicality. So, like, when that secondary is healthy, there is so much talent in that group. How special is the unit, and how good can it be playing when everybody's healthy?
Yeah, when everybody's healthy, I think it could be lights out, man, because everybody here can cover. Everybody here wants to win. Right now, you know, we're dealing with a lot of injuries, but I just think the mentality that everyone has here, guys are stepping up, you know, the next man up mentality. You know, I just think week in and week out, we're just getting better. And as we continue to get healthy, I think down the stretch, man, we'll see a lot of good things in the back end.
See, but Jason, the thing is, that team, you've been so busted up with injuries, and I understand that the NFL is a next man up mentality. That's the mentality for the entire league, but it seems like the Niners are different in the sense that you've really suffered a lot of injuries, yet everybody continues to fight. You've been with the Chargers, who I know you have a great deal of respect for. What about the Niners? How would you describe the culture and the mindset of that 49er organization? What separates that organization?
Yeah, no, it's a lot different. Here, I definitely feel that the guys' mentality is a lot different as far as when somebody's down. The next guy up, is you're not missing a beat at all. I just think that just comes with the whole entire organization as a whole, from coaches, staff, all the way down through the trainers. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody has the same goal. So when guys do go down, it's the right proper protocol to get that person back healthy. And then the guys behind, you know, they're looking for that opportunity to step in whenever the numbers call. So I just think as a whole, everybody's on the same page when it deals with injuries.
Jason Verrett joining me for another couple of moments. After that win over the Rams, when people were praising you for stepping up and leading that defense, you said, quote, "It's just the grind that I have, the fight that I've got, the family that I come from. I've always been built for moments like those." Also, it seems to me part of that family, when you talk about that, you're talking about your older brother, right, Trey? He spent some time with you after the Achilles. What does he mean to you?
Everything. I mean, the bond that we have is like no other, man. I mean, we've been tight ever since we were little boys. But fast forward, man, he was right there with me in my first collegiate game against Baylor, man, when I got torched by RG3. We had like a 2-3 hour conversation, man, and just, you know, blood, sweat, and tears on that phone call. I mean, we were letting it all out, going at each other about everything. And fast forward into with my Achilles, man, he flew out. I mean, the day that it happened, he flew down straight from the Bay down to SoCal and was there. I mean, we had a lot of heart-to-heart because, you know, I was in my dark moments. And, you know, he was right there to kind of, you know, help shift me to get to a different state of mind. You know, it was tough. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's my dog, man, and I'm happy to have an older brother like him.
Jason, you've been through so much, but when you mentioned, like, back in that game against Baylor and you got torched by RG3, I mean, part of this is you got to have a short memory, but easier said than done. When you've got that much pride and that much heart and that much grit and you feel like maybe you've been embarrassed or you haven't done your job, what's your process? How do you get through something like that and then clear your mind and get back to work and forget that it happened?
It's tough. It's tough, you know, just when you're in that moment, dealing with it. You know, obviously you work hard to not try to have those type of things happen. But when they do happen, man, you gotta just try to fight to put everything behind you. You know, it's the game of football. You know, things are going to happen. But when you're able just to have that state of mind that, you know, you got another week, another opportunity to shake those bad plays and turn them into good plays, I just think that's just part of growth, part of the football. And just understanding that, you know, those type of things can happen. But if you're able to turn it into something positive, man, you know, it'll all work out for you.
All right, then finally, speaking of another week, another opportunity, you've got Cam Newton and the Patriots on Sunday. What is the key to limiting their offense?
It's just slowing down their running game. They've always been productive at their running game, and now adding Cam, which is another dual threat for them in the running game. I just think that's something that we got to set the tone early, is stopping the run and try to force him to beat us, you know, throwing the ball in the air.
Jason, one really quick thought actually about Robert Saleh, because he said to you about you, quote, "To see his grind and what he does and what he stands for, you have an entire organization cheering him on, and we love what he's doing. It's beyond his playing ability. It's what he's been through and how hard he's stuck with it." What's it like to hear that kind of praise from him, and what's he been like to play for?
Man, Salah's, you know, a positive guy, man. Him and Gus Bradley, you know, come from that same cloth. You know, I love a guy like Salah, man. He just comes in there with a positive mindset, has a dog mentality, he's fearless. I just love playing for a coach just like that, man. He wants to see everybody excel. And that's the reason why I feel like the secondary linebackers, the whole D-line, we don't skip a beat when the next man is up, just because he's always praising for that guy to be ready when the number's called. So playing for a coach like that, man, you got a, you know, tremendous respect for.
Jason, how about my guy John Lynch? He had that dog mentality. He's got a fearless mentality. And I know because he played the game, he probably picks his spots as to when to come around, when he comes around. How much time have you spent with him? What kind of conversations do you have with John Lynch?
We had a lot of good conversations last year, you know, even though I dealt with my IR situation, but the plan that he put in front of me, the plan that he had for me, man, it's clearly shown that, you know, the respect that he had for me. So I definitely appreciate him for that. And just when he's around, man, you just know what he wants out of his guys. You know, he once was a former player, Hall of Famer, the whole nine yards. But he's definitely a guy that you like to have around and can kind of get a feel for the game from.
My guest is a Pro Bowler. He was an All-American. He was a co-Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year at TCU and has overcome all sorts of adversity and playing once again at an extremely high level, Jason Verrett. Jason, much respect. Great to have you back on the show after all this time. Good luck this weekend, and really nice to get caught up with you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you, boss. Have a good one.
Appreciate you a lot. And my man, he has come back from some unbelievable injuries and playing at an extremely high level. All grit, all heart, all work ethic. Could not respect him and what he's overcome any more than I do. All right, there are 2 hours down. Third hour's coming up. In this third hour, big head bets. In fact, that's next segment. James Kelly. I told him, hey, big head, you know I love having you on. Make sure you get to your point, man. Don't try to wow us with all that data. Get to your point. We got to cover a lot of ground. We got games. We have football. We have baseball. We have MMA. That's coming up next for entertainment purposes only.